The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Thanks to spiritmotorgroup.ie. With secure online payments, buying your next used car has never been easier. With Spirit Motor Group.
Well, now, my next guest is a leading figure in the food world, as well as an award-winning editor, broadcaster and writer. He's now decided to explore the evolution of eating out in a new book, from the ancient Romans in Pompeii to the luxurious Michelin-starred restaurants of today. How we've evolved from hunting and gathering our food to sitting in a fancy establishment waiting to be served. To tell us all about the book called The Restaurant, author William Sitwell is joining us on the line. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Hi.
It is the ultimate irony that we're talking about this today when there isn't a restaurant open in Dublin because of COVID-19.
Yes, well, some people have suggested that it's the worst possible timings. Others have said this is just immaculate, incredible timing. How clever to bring out a book about restaurants when the one thing we want to do is to eat in them, but we can think about them vicariously. So I like to think I support the latter view, that it's impeccable timing. But it is extraordinary. I mean, there isn't a moment like this in history where almost globally restaurants have been shut. There have been times when, you know, restaurants have struggled and people have shut down restaurants. But to have this extraordinary unifying lockdown that hopefully we might emerge out of soon is pretty amazing. It does make us sit down and think about what we miss about eating out and how over the years it's become such a cornerstone and an important part of our culture.
Now, there is the notion abroad that it was the French Revolution that gave rise to dining, and you do address that in your book, and Robespierre and all the rest of it, but it goes back much further. And when you open your book with Pompeii, you're thinking of all these people having a great time, knowing that the little wisp of smoke that they could see on their horizon above them was going to do for them. It's quite extraordinary.
Yes, and what is amazing about Pompeii, and anyone who's been lucky enough to go there, is that it really, the excavations over the last couple of hundred years have shown that puff of smoke that then turned into this devastating spread of lava and ash from that eruption meant that whatever was happening in Pompeii creates a snapshot in time. And what I think is extraordinary is that if you walk along the streets of Pompeii and you look at all the excavations and the things that they've discovered, you can see that actually the hospitality industry in what was then a fashionable seaside town in the region of Campania, where they grew wonderful vines, that hospitality was thriving. I mean, hospitality was a key part of the culture. It was one of the ways that the Roman Empire sort of spread itself. It had a uniform currency. It pushed its language. It had uniform administration, but it had a uniformity of this belief in the concept of hospitality. But within the city itself, from brothels to inns and taverns and hotels, people, rich and poor, okay, slaves aside, ate in the same places. And I think that, you know, if you or I were to walk along that street in those, you know, in that era of sort of, you know, AD 79, we would recognize, you know, a hospitality world that we yearn for now. It is extraordinary.
The book covers the Ottoman Empire, the legacy of a man called Ibn Battuta. Never heard of Ibn Battuta. What did he do?
Well, I love that people haven't really heard of Ibn Battuta, and some people sort of think, why is Ibn Battuta in a history of eating out? But I really wanted to look at the legacy of the early 14th century Ottoman Empire, because so much of it we still see today in restaurants. And it amuses me that when a chef sort of says, oh, there's a new trend for sharing dishes, small platters, you kind of go, well, it's not that new, because it was that sort of stuff was happening in the 1300s. Ibn Battuta was extraordinary because he was a sort of a Muslim scholar, a judge, and he went on what I call a gap year. He went away, but he came back about 30 years later and he ate out wherever he went. And of course, that was a time when, again, hospitality was something that was expected amongst travelers. And in fact, it's only till relatively recently where, you know, you're expected to pay wherever you go to eat out. And even back in the sort of 20s and 30s of the last century, people like Paddy Lee Fermor, the great English writer, managed to travel through Europe, basically living on his wits in his conversation, staying in monasteries, staying with families, and by dint of his sort of sparkling conversation was able to get fed. And people in the old world, again, could travel across the world and be fed. Now, okay, it's more eating away than eating out. But I think it's important to look at how eating, what happened when you ate away and how that then graduated to becoming eating out. Because I think certainly in this country, it was really the sort of Victorian era, the Industrial Revolution, where we saw those old cycles of agrarian economies changing. When big mills were being built, industrialization began, people had to move away from home. They didn't necessarily have lunch in their own houses. They weren't creating just crops and food for themselves. Once people started to work away from home, they then began to eat out. And those taverns then could become, you know, more places of entertainment and so on. So there is this evolution that I think you can really trace back from the 14th century.
Now, I mentioned in passing there the French Revolution and the idea that the cooks and chefs for the toffs had no work once the toffs were overthrown. So they set themselves up to sell food to the hoi polloi. And that's how that. So we'll skip that for a moment because I want to go to other things. I mean, it's not just about history and all of that. There are some very practical things like, for instance, the invention of the taco machine, the invention of the sushi conveyor belt. All of these form part of your narrative.
Yes, and It's a wonderful story about that comes from Japan and the city of Osaka, where the original sushi conveyor belt was invented by an ingenious guy who was running a small sushi shop, and he had one of his customers, one of the people he bought from was Asahi Beer, and he'd been trying to work out how he could increase his turnover without having to buy the shop next door and increase the actual square footage of his shop. And he went to the Asahi beer factory and he saw all the beer moving around the factory on these conveyor belts. And so he spoke to the person who designed those conveyor belts and said, look, could you create one of those for my restaurant, so a little bespoke contraption? And the guy agreed and he created this conveyor belt that would move the food from the kitchen into the dining room at a specific speed, not too fast so that you'd miss the plates, not too slow that they would sort of dwindle as they went past you. And I mean, the journalist who came in when he launched it thought he was kind of mad. But what he was able to do was to increase the turnover in his restaurant in the 50s without having to have more staff. It took a while for it to catch on. And in fact, it wasn't until there was a sort of big international trade fair in Japan at the end of the 60s or the early 70s that he then managed to sell this idea sort of globally. And we didn't really get conveyor belt sushi in Britain, certainly not in London, until the kind of late 80s. So some of these ideas have these extraordinarily ingenious beginnings where it's about man or woman's endeavor to try and increase their revenue, do better business, and they've come up with these extraordinary ideas that then just become part of our sort of normal dining out experience.
Now, you refer to the wasteland for eating out in Britain in the post-war years, and I'm sure similar in Ireland. I mean, they had a thing called the Wimpy Bar, which was the kind of the acme of eating out. But suddenly it would appear that London particularly became the centre for haute cuisine. How so?
Well, really, it was there were the odd places around the country where the dining scene was a bit better. But basically, post-war, people got so used to rationing that they didn't complain. And when they were given beige and boring food, they put up with it. But it was really into this grey and dull scene that two brothers, Michel Roux and Albert, came over to this country. Albert had been working in the 60s for a rich family called the Cazalets as a private chef. And Michel had been working for the Rothschild family, a very wealthy family in Paris. They both came from very humble backgrounds. They lived above a charcuterie in their hometown in Mâcon. a little sausage shop really run by their grandfather. And they saw an opportunity. Michel used to, who sadly died just a few months ago, he used to come over and spend the summers with his brother in Kent. And they used to take their young wives up to London sporadically to eat out. And they ate out appallingly. The food was terrible. It wasn't authentic. The service was terrible. And their wives couldn't really understand why it was that Michel and Albert seemed to be gleefully happy every time they ate somewhere terrible. But of course, it was because they saw an opportunity. And they saved up what little money they had. And in 1967, they opened Gavroche on the site of an old Italian restaurant that had gone bust. They, in fact, hired the manager, the Italian manager of that place. And they started fine dining. And I think there are two key things that are important about the Roux brothers, not just because they created a restaurant where they celebrated the finer elements of gastronomy, but they actually made the idea of cooking and service professions that you could aspire to. And so a lot of young successful chefs today and the new generation of chef, people who've trained under people like Marco Pierre White and British chef Rolly Lee, Marco Pierre White, Gordon Ramsay, Marcus Waring, all these people went through the Gavroche doors, and they didn't then go on to cook necessarily that kind of food. But the Roux brothers helped to make the hospitality industry a worthy profession. And I think that's just so important.
Well, the book is a great read, and it's something you can dip into because it's divided into sections. It's called The Restaurant, A History of Eating Out. It's available to order online now. Either, I presume, you can order it so that you can read it online, but you'd miss, I think, the joy of opening the book and holding it in your hand if you did that. So you can get it delivered to you. It's author William Sitwell. Thank you very much for joining us.